Welcome back to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm your host, Graham Richmond, and I am joined by really who I should be calling co-host at this point, Alex Brown. Alex, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me again, Graham.
This is kind of a special episode of the podcast, which we have kind of raced to record, and it's about the U.S. News 2020 MBA program rankings. And, you know, U.S. News was kind enough to actually give Alex and I a sneak peek at the rankings prior to their release on Tuesday. And so we're recording this episode a little bit before everyone knows what the rankings are. So we're going to walk through the ranking and weigh in. We have a lot of thoughts. Maybe we should start, Alex, by just kind of walking through the top 10 and you know, let people know, and actually maybe even run a few more than the top 10. But this year, there were, as I guess there always are, some changes. So this year's number one MBA, full-time MBA program is the Wharton School at University of Pennsylvania. Number two was Stanford Graduate School of Business, followed by number three, and actually at the number three position, we have a three-way tie between Harvard Business School, MIT Sloan, and the University of Chicago's Booth School of Business. Then we jump to number six because of all those ties, and we have another group, grouping of three schools that are tied, and that is Columbia Business School, Northwestern Kellogg, and the University of California, Berkeley Haas School of Business. So those are the three that are tied at six. And then we have Yale at number nine. Duke and Michigan are tied at number 10. And we'll just run down a few more here. Dartmouth at number 12, tied with NYU and UVA. And then we jump to 15, where we have Cornell. 16 is UCLA. 17, Carnegie Mellon, in a tie with USC, University of Southern California, that is. And then 19, UNC, Keenan Flagler, down in Chapel Hill. And they are tied at that 19 position with UT Austin, the Macomb School of Business. And then rounding things out, we've got Emory and Indiana, along with University of Washington Foster, all tied at 21, Georgetown at 24, and the University of Florida at number 25. That's the Warrington School of Business. So what do you think about this, Alex? That's kind of the top 25. Any things that you want to note right off the bat here?
Well, it's interesting that Wharton makes it to number one, Graham, and obviously Harvard has dominated that spot in recent years. So it's quite a change, I think, to see Wharton at the top.
And they've never been alone at the top in the U.S. News ranking, at least not to my, I mean, I know that Business Week had them at number one many years running, and I believe they've tied in U.S. News for number one and maybe even held that slot in the FT, but I don't believe they've ever been by themselves at number one in the U.S. News ranking. So that's kind of a big milestone for that program.
No, I think you're exactly right. Other than that, yeah, there were some interesting movements, I think, in the U.S. News ranking this year that we can highlight. That said, I'm a big believer of all the major rankings that this is the most accurate. And I say that if you look at the sort of the top, let's say, seven programs, the top six plus those that are tied for sixth, they include all the what we call the M7 schools. And I think that's accurate. And I would say the top 16 does include what I would consider the top 16 programs. And that's reflected in the DecisionWire data that we have here at Clear Admit. Mm-hmm. Right, Graham?
Yeah, I would say, and I guess, you know, just for some background benefit for our listeners here, I always say users because we have a website that everyone uses, but for podcast listeners, you know, one thing to remember is that the U.S. News ranking only does, American MBA programs. So there is that caveat, right? So if you're wondering, like, why are, you know, London Business School or INSEAD not on the list, it's just because they don't, they're not included in this ranking. And we actually, Alex and I have talked about this. We think that does make sense to have kind of a separate way of classifying schools based on region because of the fact that region can be an important factor in, you know, careers and people's decision making about where they want to be. And so it creates some sort of problems in ranking everything in one kind of group. But I do agree, U.S. News is widely respected. We actually have I was chatting with someone on our team who used to work in admissions at an MBA program and said for his institution, U.S. News was kind of the gold standard. That was the one that mattered most. So I absolutely agree with you there.
Yeah, so let's look at a few risers, I guess is a right term, and a few that slipped a little bit relative to last year. Obviously, the big news here is Harvard is not number one, and they've slipped to join tied for third, Graham.
Yeah, and I thought it was interesting how both, you know, Wharton and Stanford basically jumped over. You know, last year we had a tie, for those of you who didn't see last year's ranking, we had a tie with, it was Harvard and Chicago at the top. And so they've both been kind of leapfrogged by, you know, Wharton and then Stanford kind of jumping up in front of them. And that was surprising to me.
Yeah, me too. And there's no doubt all four programs, outstanding programs. But I'm a big believer right at the top, Harvard and Stanford. So when I see Harvard slip from one to tied for third, I'm a little bit not skeptical, I don't think is the right term, but it does raise a little bit of a question in terms of the ranking methodology. So why would a school like Harvard that is an aspiration for many top MBA candidates bounce like that? Do you have any insight into that, Graham?
Well, I mean, I think one thing that's important to remember, and I think where you're coming from, Alex, is based on, you know, we are privy at ClearAdmit to just tons of data on how applicants behave. We've harped on this quite a bit on the podcast in terms of, you know, people use DecisionWire on the ClearAdmit website to kind of indicate, here's where I got in, here's how much money I was given in scholarship, and here's where I'm going to school. And so we see people making decisions. So I think the reason you're saying that you raise an eyebrow when you see Harvard at number three is because we don't see that kind of behavior playing out in terms of the applicant decision-making process, meaning when someone gets into Harvard and these other schools, you know, Harvard often does win that kind of head-to-head matchup. And so I think that's what's doing it in this case. Although, you know, U.S. News has mentioned that part of the reason for Wharton and Stanford's ascent, you know, some of it's related to kind of career placement data and salary information. And so I think, you know, that those schools are just doing a great job placing their candidates. I think Wharton in particular shined in that dimension this year. So that could be some of it.
Yeah, I know last year you identified that as an issue for Stanford, for example, when it placed itself at fourth. And the idea being that so, you know, a lot of their students are on a relative scale are sort of interested in entrepreneurship, sort of tech jobs where they haven't got something lined up directly upon graduation. They're sort of mulling their opportunities and so forth. Do you see that at play at all this year with Harvard? And how do you see that has affected Stanford's rise to some extent this year?
Yeah, I think, I mean, the main thing, it's interesting because we were talking around the office when we first saw the numbers come across the wire here, and we were talking about how some of this ranking feels a little corrective in the sense that last year we were scratching our heads about some of the placement, some of the ranking information. You know, was Stanford being punished because a lot of people are going off into entrepreneurship? Or, you know, was Yale, we had talked, was Yale being punished a bit because maybe a greater percentage of their candidates look into kind of, you know, nonprofit related jobs and things. And so it's interesting because you see both Yale and Stanford doing better this year. And so I think some of this is their, I'm not sure if it's the schools adapting to the methodology that U.S. News is employing, or if it's U.S. News tweaking things. I have not had a chance to dig incredibly deeply into, you know, any big changes to the methodology or things like that. But it does seem like they're doing a better job of capturing, you know, the sort of on the ground reality of what we see in terms of candidate behavior when they're given the choice between schools.
Yeah, I would completely agree with that assessment. Yale is an interesting school because 2 years ago it ranked ninth. It has now returned to that spot, having dropped a few points in the year in between. So I would imagine that the folks at Yale would be quite happy to. They're sort of in that mix, I think, in my mind anyway with Haas Berkeley, and they're right behind Haas in this ranking. So they're probably pretty happy about that.
Yeah, I would think so. It is interesting because, you know, for all the shuffling that we saw with respect to, like, you know, Wharton and Stanford leapfrogging Harvard and Booth, we still have some stability in the kind of top seven, with the one exception being that I believe last year Columbia was not in the top seven. They were kind of supplanted. I believe it was Berkeley that was. No, wait, now I'm getting this mixed
yeah,
up.
Berkeley
yeah,
Berkeley
yeah, Ber-
no, no,
yeah,
and Ross.
Yeah, Berkeley and Ross. Yeah, so we have this kind of jockeying for position going on, but you know, in the top sort of end of this, there's some moving around, but the schools that are part of the sort of set of the selection set are there. Whereas, you know, when you look as you move down a little bit, you do see things like, for example, Michigan, you know, they were at number 7 last year in a tie with Haas, and they've kind of dropped down into a tie for the 10th spot with Duke. And so as some of these schools move down, as a Dartmouth moves out of the top 10, we have room for Yale to kind of come back into the top 10. So there's this kind of like constant jockeying for position, it seems. And I'm sure that, you know, for some of these programs, being able to say your top 10 is, it carries some weight. And as we've said, US News is a kind of gold standard ranking. And so I'm sure that they're keeping a close eye on this.
Again, I agree. I think one of the schools that might be a little bit nervous in terms of seeing this ranking would be Tuck. Graham, in 2 years ago, ranked 8th. Last year, a little bit of a slide to 10th. He's now out of the top 10 at number 12. What's your assessment there?
Yeah, this is kind of interesting for me, just as someone who's been in this space for so long, to see them not as a top 10 school when, you know, when I worked in admissions at Wharton, at that time, we viewed Tuck as, kind of a almost like a honorary member of the M7. If it was an M8, Tuck was going to be in the group, you know. And for some reason, they've been struggling in some of the rankings of late. I do wonder to what extent location is making it challenging for some of these schools that are not in or around big kind of what I would call geographic hotspots for jobs, you know. So we've seen last year, we talked a lot about how, you know, gosh, schools like Foster out in Seattle were doing quite well. And, you know, even McCombs in Austin, you know, has a strong showing. Schools obviously in New York or in the Valley always doing well. I think Haas has really benefited from their location over the years because they're a school that is now consistently, you could argue, in that spot that Tuck used to occupy, right? They're kind of that next school after the M7 in a lot of these rankings. And so I don't know, is it geography? Is it on the margin harder to convince a spouse to go to a school that's in a non-urban location? I mean, there are a lot of possible factors here. And again, we literally just, this data was just dumped on our desk, so we haven't gone through it in as much detail as we will in the coming days. But so it's hard to say what's driving this. I haven't, you know, unpacked all the data with respect to Tuck specifically. But it is worrisome to me to see them falling, you know, 2 slots each year, a couple years in a row.
Yeah, it's surprising to me. I mean, like you, I sort of associate Tuck just outside of that M7 group, along with, let's say, Haas and Yale. I think they're reasonably interchangeable in terms of their overall brand and quality and what they offer. And maybe location is working against them a little bit. But I also think there's a little bit of another factor, and it's reflected in. You see the rankings. There are a lot of tied numbers. So there's 3 for 3rd, 3 for 6th, couple for 10th, 3 for 12th. These are, you know, clearly they're very closely clustered in terms of their ordinal ranking. And we've said, I think, for a number of years now that candidates are much smarter looking at rankings from a tiered perspective rather than a simple ordinal perspective, as are produced by the likes of US News, Financial Times, and Business Week, and so forth.
And it's interesting. We really see candidate behavior being driven more in a tier kind of fashion, you know, with respect to making decisions about where to attend. Again, looking at the Tuck data, which, you know, again, I have on my desk here, just, you know, I mean, they seem to be doing okay in most categories. Obviously, the, you know, the percentage of grads employed is a little lower, but not, you know, it's not that different than some of the very top schools. You know, I think it is lower than, say, Ross. You know, they have an 80% employment rate at Tuck at graduation, right? And then obviously within 3 months, it's at 91. So it goes up dramatically. Whereas at Ross, for example, it's at 89% employed at graduation and 93.5% employed 3 months out. And actually, in fairness, Tuck is, Tuck is at 92% 3 months out. It's 91.9. So there, yeah, it's hard to say. And we'd want to comb through these a little more carefully. But I do agree that some of what happens here, I think we can get wrapped up in it too, because it's fun to talk about rankings. But some of what happens here is, you know, maybe a little arbitrary in the sense that we don't see marketplace behavior reflecting some of these subtle changes in ranking from 1 year to the next. So as you said, you know, it could be that Tuck sits very squarely in this group with Haas and Yale and maybe even Stern or Duke, and that, you know, whether one of them's at the top of that group or the back of that group, it doesn't really change how candidates are perceiving perceiving these schools and making decisions.
Right. And you know, one person's career goals and geography goals and so on and so forth will dictate one of the schools is better than the other, and a different person with different goals will dictate the other school is better than the one. And I think that's what we see time and again in decision wire data that's never going to be reflected in an ordinal ranking like this. Let's turn quickly to Ross, Graham. Ross last year, much excitement, tied for seventh place, getting in amongst that sort of M7 group, ahead of Columbia, in fact. They've slipped a little bit. What's your take there? Are they returning to where we typically see them, or is this another factor at play?
I mean, again, like we said earlier, I think some of this is corrective. You know, we see, you know, Stanford moving up a bit, Yale moving up a bit, Ross moving back a bit. So it's sort of, you know, fitting a little bit more with what we see in terms of applicant behavior. I mean, one thing that stands out for me with Ross is that they have a 27% acceptance rate. And just to give you a sense of where that falls, if you look at peer programs, you know, Stanford has a 6% acceptance rate. HBS is at 10. You know, even if we look at some other schools in the top 10, Berkeley, only 15.4%. Tuck, who's ranked, you know, lower in this ranking than Michigan, is at 23%. So that 27% figure does jump out at me with respect to Ross. And so some of it could be, yeah, that they're just, you know, it's maybe a little less selective, you could argue, as compared to their peers. Obviously, you know, I feel like we need to caveat everything we're saying on this podcast with the fact that if you're anywhere even sniffing these 25, you know, top 25, you're a pretty amazing MBA program. And so I think, you know, we should never lose sight of that. You know, all these schools are terrific, but it is, so that's the number that sort of jumps out at me, because the other numbers are not, there's nothing glaring there, you know?
Yeah, no, I would absolutely agree. And I'd also reiterate your point. Ross is an absolutely fantastic program, regardless of where it's ranked in US News and other rankings. We know that, the same with you know, Yale, Haas, and these other programs we're mentioning. So a lot of the other schools in what I would call the top 16, very little movement. We have sort of Duke may have moved one position. Stern is about exactly where it was last year, may have moved one position. Darden is the same, again, may have moved one position, but pretty much the same. Cornell, 15th, Anderson, UCLA Anderson, 16th, exactly the same as last year. So, a lot of consolidation in this ranking relative to last year in reality.
Yeah, I think it is interesting how I was going through this, kind of just comparing, you know, the 2 years, and it is interesting how literally I got to a point where I was like, oh, okay, you know, Stern's kind of in the same spot. They moved one, but because of the ties, they're essentially in the same spot. And as you said, it's like, you know, Darden, Cornell, UCLA, Carnegie Mellon, they're all kind of still in the same general area, and in fact, in the same slot in most cases. One of the things that strikes me, though, is the continued move of the University of Southern California Marshall School, because, you know, they were, I believe, ranked maybe 20th last year, and this year they're up to 17. But I think I'm a little biased, because if memory serves, they did quite well. I believe it was in Business Week or maybe the FT, but they've been really moving onto the scene and kind of nipping at the heels of their crosstown rival, UCLA. I mean, they're really right there now. And that's something that's, you know, just new to see. There used to be a bit more of a separation between those two. Do you have any thoughts as to why, like, what's going on there? Because we've noted that that program did something really interesting, which is they achieved gender parity as well, you know, in the last year. So I think there's interesting things happening on that campus. But any thoughts on your end as to what's going on?
Yeah, I mean, I would completely agree, and that was going to be the next school I was going to mention. They're really snapping on the heels of their neighbor, UCLA Anderson. And like you said, they did something rather remarkable last year with getting in their enrolled class more than 50% women, really sort of bucking the tide, as it were. The top programs are averaging 40% in terms of sort of women versus men in their program, which is very good relative to 10 years previously. And then as you sort of drop down the rankings a little bit, typically it's 30%. And then US, you know, Marshall is this sort of outlier at around 50%. I mean, there are a couple of other programs in there sort of ranked close to them around the 40s, but most of them are 30. So they're obviously doing something really interesting to attract candidates and to market themselves. And they obviously offer, again, an outstanding program like all the other schools we mentioned. So interesting things going on in Los Angeles. It is, what, Graham, the second or third largest city in the United States. Mate,
your British nationality is showing. Yeah, LA is the second largest city in America. But I think, as you were probably about to say, they benefit from, I mean, that's a region where there are lots of jobs. I think particularly now where there's been this like collision course between sort of Silicon Valley and the media and entertainment domain. You know, there's so much interesting things happening with you know, kind of the arrival of kind of, you know, Hollywood's digital now. You know, there's so much happening with respect to Netflix and other studios. And so I think there's a lot of opportunity there. And actually, this is one of the things that does stand out for me with USC is, you know, if we just look at them, at their program and UCLA Anderson, it's interesting, you know, obviously Anderson, which, you know, typically is the higher ranked program, they have a 716 average GMAT score, whereas USC's 705. So there's a gap there. But then if you look at the career stats, percentage of students employed at graduation with UCLA Anderson, it's 69.7%. With Marshall, it's 79.2%. Now, if we look 3 months out, which is really, I think, the fair metric, it goes up to, what is it? Let's just make sure I've got the numbers right here. It goes up to 88%, 88.7% for UCLA Anderson. But with USC Marshall, it goes up to 95.8%. So whoever's running their career office is obviously getting jobs for people. And I think that's playing a role in this, you know, in this kind of increased showing in the rankings.
No, I would completely agree. And I actually think, and I'm just checking some data now, I think the median starting salary at Marshall is, you know, very comparative relative to Anderson. You know, whether one's a couple of thousand more than the other, it's very close.
And just looking at it now, Marshall is at $151,000 starting salary plus bonus. UCLA Anderson's at like $143,000. So actually Marshall is winning in that. So on the kind of career placement front and starting salary, they're doing really well. And that's probably, you know, really helping them with these rankings numbers. So
very interesting, always exciting with these rankings when they're produced and published. And there's lots of, you know, positive commentary, negative commentary, depending on which school and your perspective. Sometimes jobs are lost and so forth in admissions and higher up. People would be shocked to really realize that. Anything else that really stands out to you in this ranking, Graham?
Well, I mean, I always look and see, you know, to what extent do the schools that are actually present in the top 25 of this ranking shift, right? So it's probably not surprising to learn that of the schools in the top 25, 23 of them were in this top 25 last time, right? So there hasn't been a ton of, it's not like there's an influx of a ton of new schools. But I think it's notable. There are a couple of schools that dropped out of the top 25. So that would be Washington University in St. Louis, the Olin School. They were at 23 last year, and they fell out of the top 25 this year. Similarly, Rice was also in the top 25. I believe they were tied, actually, with Olin last year at 23. They're not in the top 25 this year. And so that means there's two open spots. And so Indiana, the Kelley School of Business, jumped in and landed at 21, which makes a lot of sense to me. I was surprised that they were not there last time around. And then we see the University of Florida at number 25. And that is, you know, for me, was interesting to see. I mean, I haven't seen them in the top 25 in recent years. I'd have to go back and look a few years ago, but I don't believe they were there. So that's a great, you know, great news for that program. They're probably really excited about that. And we'll, you know, hopefully do some marketing around that, you know, top 25 MBA program. That's a nice thing to be able to say.
As a quick point, Rice and Washington Olin are tied for 26. So they didn't fall too far.
So they're right on the cusp then. Okay. So that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, and the top 16, as we mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, is the top 16 from last year, sort of again reaffirming that that's a consolidation. Graham, how should a candidate use these rankings?
Yeah, I think I would say as much fun as we have with them and enjoy doing these, you know, kind of podcast episodes or articles that we throw up on the site, I would say you use them with caution. They can be great, though, for, you know, particularly if you're taking a sampling of multiple rankings. And we did a whole episode, I think it was called Rankings 2.0, where we talk about the need to use and kind of aggregate different rankings together to get a sort of to build consensus around the schools that you're targeting. So I think early on when you start the research phase, it's very useful. You know, you can look at the FT, you can look at US News, Business Week, Forbes. I mean, there are a whole bunch of rankings out there. And there are even sites like P&Q and others out there that'll aggregate these things. So you can, you know, aggregate the rankings, figure out if you see a school that's kind of that fits in terms of your geographic restrictions, or you know, if you want to work in tech and you want to be in the Valley, like, so, you know, school fits into that framework, and then you're seeing that yes, it's consistently coming up across all these rankings, then you're building consensus, and you can kind of be, you know, fairly safe. You know, it's safe to assume that this is a good target school for you. I don't think it's fair. You know, you'll see on Reddit or other, you know, just forums, you know, that when these rankings come out, all of a sudden people will say like, ha, I told you that Wharton was better than Stanford. Look at this, you know, ranked number one. You know, that's just ridiculousness that people are, you know, they want to fight about moving one position or a few positions up or down. That's kind of ridiculous, right? But using these rankings as a way at the beginning of the process to build your sort of target list is useful. And then I think you often talk about how to use them later as well in the process, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's just sort of similar points that you're expressing, but clearly you want to identify your own personal goals, your professional goals, and where you want to be after the MBA, even geographically. And then, you know, these schools will rank differently for those particular goals. If you know that you want to be in New York City, then Stern is a compelling option right there on Wall Street. And whilst it's ranked tied for 12th, in this particular ranking, it wouldn't be your 12th best choice for an MBA program if you know you want to be in New York City, especially if you want to work in investment banking. So you really do need to tie your own aspirations to then come up with your own ranking. Then obviously, again, we talk about the idea that particular programs are so close in terms of overall competitiveness that we would put them in the same tier. So, for instance, in this ranking, you know, well, not this ranking, but like typically we think of the likes of Sloan, Booth, Columbia, Kellogg, and maybe even one or two others, but certainly those four in the same tier. So depending on your professional goals, one of those four programs is probably better suited to you, and then someone else with different professional goals and geographic goals, another program of those four would be better suited and would be favored. So just keeping those issues in mind, and not to spend too much time plugging our own resource, but going to DecisionWire, doing searches on individual schools, admissions, admits, enrolled, applied, you'll soon see the schools to which they really compete with for different candidates. So there is a lot of data out there that you can access to come up with your own ranking.
That makes sense. Yeah. So again, we say, you know, you certainly use the rankings, look at them, have fun, you know, debating with friends. But, you know, there's a lot that goes into it. You know, for example, you know, sometimes people have a spouse that they have to consider. There's all kinds of factors, right? And so, but yeah, use rankings to build consensus, as we always say. I did want to give a special thank you to Madeline over at US News, who gave us kind of early access to this data. We really appreciate that. And we do encourage everyone to head over to usnews.com/best-graduate-schools. That's a great place to go. You can get all the information. The ranking is published Tuesday. So literally when you're listening to this podcast, this data should be available online for you to look at over at usnews.com. So please do that. And yeah, again, thanks for listening to this podcast. Please continue to rate us on iTunes. I promise I will personally read out your reviews if they come in. So rate and review us on iTunes, and yeah, we'll look for those. And yeah, stay tuned. We have a really exciting podcast coming up next week, and I will not say who it is, but it's a really great special guest. So stay tuned to the podcast. And Alex, thanks as always for co-hosting this special exclusive U.S. News 2020 rankings breakdown. Always a pleasure to chat with you about this stuff.
And we should finish up by saying it's great that Wharton is number one because we're both tied to
yes,
Wharton.
Yes, I was trying.
Previous history, so we yes. we really should disclose that just for the integrity of our commentary.
That's true. Although I think we were not terribly rah-rah-rah about Wharton here. I mean, so Alex, as many of you know, used to work in admissions at Wharton for more than 7 years. I did my MBA at Wharton, also worked in admissions there. So we do love Wharton, but I think we're very fair in our discussion of the ranking. But yes, it is nice to see Wharton at the top, and we're really proud of that institution. And again, all these are great schools. If you're in the rankings at all, you're already doing something right. So thanks everyone for tuning in. Yeah, we really appreciate it. And stay tuned for the next episode. Thanks a lot, Alex.
Brilliant. Thanks a lot, Graham. Take care.